Exodus chapter 3, if you have your Bible, please turn with us this morning. And we want to look at this chapter, and God willing, next week into chapter 4, on the topic of making excuses. Now, last week we noticed from Exodus chapter 2 that Moses got the victory over riches. He was offered all the wealth of Egypt, and he said, "I'd rather have Jesus than silver or gold." And Moses made a decision when he was 40 years of age that he was going to worship the one true God, and he was going to identify with this God. And he walked away from the royal palace, he walked away from the throne of Egypt and the wealth of Egypt and the power of Egypt. But having won the victory over that, Moses failed to get the victory over impatience. Because Moses decided he would try to speed God's timetable up for his life. And he did so by murdering a man, an Egyptian. And God had to humiliate him. And his life now is a disaster. And Moses has gone from rags to riches, or I should say from riches to rags, the other side of that story, in just 24 hours. He has gone from being the prince of Egypt, the mighty prince, to being a beggar, a fugitive, on the run for his life. And now in chapter 3, 40 years later, so from the end of chapter 2 to the start of chapter 3, we jump 40 years. Moses is an old man now. He's 80. Now, don't be insulted if you're here and you're close to 80 and say, "I'm not old." I have to tell you, you are. Okay? Moses is 80. He's lived 40 years, we're told here, at the backside of the desert, in the obscurity. That's what he's been doing for 40 years. He's no longer a young man. He's no longer a strong man. He no longer can talk the language of the court and the palace. He probably has lost the ability to even speak Egyptian. For 40 years he's been talking the language, the common language of the Midianite people. Probably hasn't met an Egyptian for 40 years. He's lost confidence. He's become frail. And his dreams have died in the sun of the desert, in the sand of the desert. And no doubt Moses feels, "The only thing left for me is to die here with my little family in obscurity in the desert." 40 long years he's been there. 40 years of obscurity. 40 years of being nothing. And he hasn't even acquired any possessions, because we read here in verse 1 of chapter 3 that his job is still taking care of his father-in-law's sheep. Not even his own sheep. The simplest job you could do in those days is to be a shepherd. The first rung on the ladder of success is to have your own sheep. He hasn't even got there after 40 years. He's still a servant. He's still a helper. He still owns nothing. What a come down for the mighty prince of Egypt, who had all the wealth and all the power at 40 years of age. And here he is, 40 years later, an old man with nothing. And this is the last place on earth that Moses would expect to hear the voice of God. This is the last place on earth you would expect to find a person that will be God's man to deliver the Jewish people. In fact, if you were to go around the Jewish people of that day and you were to say to them, "Who do you think would make a great deliverer, a great leader for the Jews?" Moses would have been at the end of the list, wouldn't he? And Moses would have thought his name would have been at the end of the list too. But God had a different way. God had a different plan. You see, God sent Moses on a 40-year university program of humiliation, of teaching Moses meekness, self-control, of teaching Moses patience, of teaching Moses humility, of teaching Moses that the strength must come from God, not from you. And now, after 40 long years in the wilderness, Moses is about to graduate from this school. And he doesn't even know it. He thinks that the school God has put him in, this crucible of suffering and shame and humiliation, that this is just his end. And the day begins just like any other of the 14,600 days Moses had spent in the wilderness. Nothing significant. Nothing extraordinary. Moses didn't wake up and see a vision and God say, now today is the day, Moses, this is all going to change. Just an ordinary day. An exceptional day, we would say. Mundane. Boring. And Moses just gets up and goes about the task God has given him to do. Take care of his father-in-law's sheep. That's his role. He doesn't moan. Doesn't complain. Doesn't say, I don't deserve this. He just gets up and does it. Faithful. In the small task that God has given him to do. The circumstance God has placed him. And you know, you'll discover that if you just embrace the circumstances that God puts you in, no matter how humiliating it may be, no matter how long you may be there, you might discover that one day God will intervene and change your circumstances. Because now God's able to use you. You see, 40 years before, God couldn't use this man. He was too big-headed. You see, you can be too big for God to use, but you can never be too small. Moses, sadly, was too big when he was 40 years of age. He thought he was too great, too powerful, too significant, too talented. And God had to say to him, sorry, Moses, not now. Go back to school. Go back to the wilderness for 40 years and stay there. And learn to have your character shaped by providence. And now here he is at 80 years of age. And God is going to call him. The call that Moses wanted when he was 40 now comes when he's 80. Isn't that ironic? The call that Moses desired, believed that he deserved, at 40 years of age, to come and lead the nation, it now comes at 80. And the ironic thing is, Moses doesn't want it now. He says to God, sorry, you got the wrong postcode. The wrong guy. 40 years ago, you had the right guy, but not now. I'm an old man. I'm weak. I can't even talk well. I'm frail. I'm not charismatic. I'm not a leader. Now, way back in Egypt, there's probably a guy there. He's much more talented than me, much more capable than me. A guy who resembles what I was like 40 years ago. God says, no. You're just right now, Moses. Because you know you're nothing. It took 40 years. For God to humble Moses. It took 40 years for God to prepare this man. And it may take God 40 years to prepare you. Now, when the call of God comes to Moses, Moses makes a lot of excuses. And we're going to spend this week and into chapter 4 next week to see some of these excuses. But before we look at them, just look at the background here. We're told that he comes to a mountain called Horeb, the end of verse 1 of chapter 3. And suddenly we're told the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Now, in the desert, even to today, sometimes the few bushes that grow there, they will combust. They will suddenly burst into flames. Now, this is common because they're very dry and the sun's very, very hot, that occasionally the sun gets so hot and concentrated on a part of a tree or a bush that it can just explode. So Moses knew that this could happen. Maybe he had seen over 40 years in the desert, he had seen bushes just burst into flames. Just an ordinary bush. But Moses, in verse 3, recognizes something's different about this bush. Moses had seen bushes burn before in the desert. But he had never seen a bush that burns but is not destroyed, not consumed, just keeps burning. As if someone just keeps adding more and more branches to it. Moses recognizes straight away that there's something happening here. And he says, I'm going to stand aside. In fact, I must see what's going on here. And he immediately is drawn to this burning bush. Suddenly, unexpectedly, as Moses is going about his daily duties, after, as I said, 14,600 days in the desert of nothing happening, of God not talking to him, God suddenly speaks. God calls unto him in verse 4 out of the midst of the bush and says two words, Moses, Moses. I wonder, you know, did Moses change his name when he was down in Midian to hide who he was? This may well have been the first time in 40 years, four decades, that someone called him Moses. And called him two times, Moses, just in case he thought, oh, I'm dreaming here. Moses, from this bush. And Moses replies and he says, here am I. God tells him, take your shoes off because you're on holy ground. You're coming before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords here. And I've got a message for you. Now, what's God's message? Verse 6. I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. God reveals, I'm the God who's always alive. I'm not just the God of today, I'm the God of yesterday. I'm the God of your ancestors, the one true God. And Moses, we're told, is afraid because he knows this is the one true God and I'm seeing him face to face here through this angel. In verse 7, the Lord goes on to say to him, I have seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt and I've heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. I read this week someone wrote that milk is not good for you. What nonsense. What nonsense. Then they tell you that honey poisons you. What nonsense. The Bible calls a good land is a land flowing of milk and honey. If you're not feeling well, you take some milk with some honey and you'll feel better. I promise you. But that's not in my sermon, but I just thought I'd say that. It annoyed me when I read that. Some fool, Singaporean fool, wrote some book or some commentary that milk is bad for you. It says, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. This is the land of Canaan, the land of Israel today. And God says, now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come unto me. And I have also seen the oppressions wherewith the Egyptians oppress them. So up until verse 9, God is telling Moses, I know what's going on. I'm not fooled. I hear the cry. I see the many years of suffering. I'm aware of what exactly is happening to the Jewish people down in Egypt. See it all. I know it all. Now Moses, up until this point, would have agreed with God. Moses is saying, yeah, that's true. In fact, it was true 40 years ago. when I was a prince in Egypt. Moses is nodding away, yes. Maybe he's even saying, amen, yes, amen. That's right. But then, verse 10 is where Moses is going to have a problem. Because verse 10, God says, come now, therefore, and I will send thee, you Moses. Oh, I have a job for you. You're not to stay with these sheep any longer. You're to go to Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Wow. It's like a hammer blow to Moses. What? Me? 40 years ago? Yes, I could have done it. What kept you, Lord? You can almost see him looking at his heart. What kept you? 40 years ago, I could have been the man. I was young. I was strong. I could speak the language. I was eloquent. I was a general. I led armies. I was somebody. And 40 years ago, people looked up to me. All the Jews looked up to me. They respected me. They feared me. But now I'm an old man. I'm just a shepherd. I have no talents, no skills left. People will laugh at me. People will think I'm nothing. And Moses immediately intervenes in what God has said. You almost get a sense he interrupts God here. And he jumps in verse 11 and he says, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel? Now, God didn't give Moses an invitation here. He gave him what? A command. He says, come, remember what he says in verse 10? Come now therefore, and I will send thee. Come. Go, Moses. Moses said, oh, no, 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 no. You got the wrong guy. You must have made a mistake. Your clock's 40 years out. And Moses says, and he gives at least 5 excuses. Now, we're not going to go through all of them today because they go into chapter 4 as well. But you'll notice the first excuse he'll give in verse 11 is, I am not significant anymore. I'm nobody. Who am I? He says, who am I? I'm a nobody. I'm a shepherd. I don't even own my own sheep. I'm an old man. That I should go unto Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt. He says, I'm not capable. I'm not adequate. Who am I? But then the second excuse he gives in verse 13. He says, and the Lord, Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? Moses says, I don't really know God. What? They'll question me about my theological ability and say, well, what's God's name then? What do you know about God, Moses? Moses said, well, I've been in the desert for 40 years. I don't know much. They're not going to respect me, he says. I'm not a scholar anymore. I'm not a theologian. But then, in chapter 4, verse 1, he says, behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. I think you've got the wrong verse. You're Acts 4, not Exodus 4. Exodus 4, verse 1. Moses says, I'm not convincing. You know, if I get there and I tell them God spoke to me and God told me to go here and deliver you, they'll just say, I don't believe you, old man. I don't believe God would call you. I don't believe God could use you. And then in Exodus 4, verse 10, he gives a fourth excuse. Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, for I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. He says, 40 years in the wilderness, talking to the sheep, I've lost the ability to speak. I'm afraid to speak in public. I'm afraid to talk to powerful people. 40 years ago I could have done it, but not now. I'm too old. Slow speech. I don't have the confidence. And then in verse 13 of chapter 4, having given all these excuses, Moses makes the worst excuse of all. He says, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of whom thou wilt send. In other words, he says, God, choose someone else. I don't want to go. I don't want the problem. I don't want the pressure. I don't want the hassle. You send another person. So 5 times Moses excuses himself before God. 5 times he says to God, not me, try someone else. And maybe you're here today and God is calling you to do a role for him. Maybe it's to be a good mother. Maybe it's to be a good father. Maybe it's to be a good husband or good wife. Maybe it's even to be a grandparent. Maybe it's to be an employer or an employee. Maybe it's to be just serving in the church in some role. And God has placed that burden on your heart. And God has called you through all kinds of circumstances. You hear his voice drawing you to do that. And you're making excuses. Not now. I'm too old. Not for me. I'm not talented enough. I don't have the time. Or maybe you're just using the excuse like Moses at the end. Send someone else. I don't want to do it. I don't want to sacrifice. I don't want to be the one with this problem, this pressure. I feel inadequate. I don't feel I'm capable. Or just selfishly, I don't want to do it. I don't feel I want to waste my time. Maybe you're at your burning bush today. Like Moses. Well, let's see how God responds to Moses' excuses. Now, we won't take time to go through them all. But we'll just go through this chapter. Will God say, okay, I hear you. Maybe I've made a mistake here. I've got the wrong guy. Thank you, Moses, for clarifying. I'll move on and try someone else. Now, what does God say to Moses? Verse 12 of Exodus chapter 3. When Moses makes his first excuse, who am I? I'm nobody. God says, certainly I will be with thee. What's God saying there? God is saying to Moses, Moses, it doesn't matter who you are. All that matters is I'm with you. It's not about your talents, Moses. It never was about your talents. It's only about what talents God has. I'm not looking for your talents. I'm looking for your availability, Moses. That's it. Nothing else. If I call you, I'll equip you. And as long as you have me with you, Moses, you've got everything. And God is simply saying to you and I the same message today. I am not impressed with your talents. That's what God is telling you. You know, we're very impressed with our own talents and abilities. We love to show them off. We almost think that God should be impressed. And we forget that all the talents and abilities we have are given to us by God. Even the very oxygen to breathe is given to us by God. Paul says in his writings, what is it that thou hast first received? What is it? What do you have that you haven't received from God? It's a great question. Everything, everything, from the hairs on your head to the oxygen you breathe, to every cent in your pocket and in your bank account, to every home that you own, to every car that you own, to every achievement that you have in life, all of it is by the grace of God. None of it is earned by us. None of it we have a right for and a right to. And we forget that so quickly. And God is reminding Moses here, listen, Moses, it's not about your abilities. It's not about your talents. It's not about who you are. It's not about how significant you are. It only matters that I'm significant. And I'm great. And I'm powerful. And I'm Alpha and Omega. I'm the beginning and the end. I own everything. I control everything. That's all that's important, Moses. Certainly I'll be with you. Really what God says is, that's enough. That should be enough. Move on. Get on the way to Egypt, Moses. But God very graciously says to Moses, in the same verse, a promise, in verse 12. He says, this shall be a token unto thee. Here's a sign, he says. Because you're a weak man, Moses. He says, this shall be a token that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. What mountain is he talking about? The mountain of Horeb, 8,000 feet high. Now, here's something very interesting. Normally, we would think that when God calls a person and the person doubts, and God says, I'll give you a sign, it's some miraculous sign that suddenly appears like the burning bush. And that's the sign that God uses to prove that he's really calling us. That's the way we think. That's what we look for. But here God doesn't do that. God says to Moses, oh, you get a sign, all right, but it'll only be after you go to Egypt, and after you leave Egypt, then you'll see this sign. In other words, God says, you obey first, then you'll see my blessing. And maybe I'm talking to someone here today. God has called you to serve him in some capacity. And you have made a bargain with God, a deal. There's a lot of people like that. Say, if God does this for me, then I will do this for him. Only if he does this for me. They arbitrarily, they decide for themselves. This is the way it's got to be. And sometimes God will say to us, no. No. You do what I said. Obey. Then, and only then, will I intervene and bless your life and help you. And if you're bargaining with God today, here's my advice. Stop it. Stop it. You know, there are people like bargain with God all the time. If I get a good bill of health, then I'll come to church every week. Then I'll help this missionary out. Then I'll serve in the Sunday school. If. My children pass their exams, then I'll come to church every week. If I get the promotion, then I'll pay my tithe. If. No, my advice to you is you do what God says you're supposed to do first. You go first. In fact, if we look at salvation, we'll learn this lesson. God has already gone first. He gave his son, didn't he? He made the ultimate sacrifice. He says, I've already gone first. Why should I go first and then second and third? Because of your weakness. Sometimes God will look you in the eye through your circumstances and he'll say, no. I've already made the sacrifice. Now it's up to you to respond. Now it's up to you to do the right thing. I've told you what I want you to do. It's here. If you want to know what God wants you to do in your life, it's here. 66 books. It's full of instruction, full of advice. And you begin here and start to obey it. And then you'll see God start to work in your life, in your circumstances. Now, when God says that to Moses, that should have been enough, shouldn't it? For Moses to say, you know, he's already seen the miracle of the burning bush. How many more? He's already seen God speak to him through the angel of the Lord at the burning bush. How many more signs does this guy want? I don't know about you, but I've never met God in a burning bush. Have you? I've never met an angel before. And here's Moses, privileged by God with this unique call. Nobody else in the Bible has this type of call. At a burning bush, in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, and God knows his name. God has a command for him to do. God tells him how to do it. God tells him when to do it. And then when Moses makes the excuse, you know, I'm not really very significant, God says, don't you worry, I'll be with you. That should have been enough, shouldn't it? The next verse should have been, and Moses left Midian and made his way to Egypt. That should have been the next verse. But it wasn't. Because verse 13, here's Moses. Now, by the way, Moses says he's not good at talking. He does a lot of talking, you notice? He's got no problem talking to God, telling God what to do. And Moses said unto God, verse 13, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? The children of Israel, you know, he says, God, they're down in Egypt for 400 years, and they see all these gods, and they're persecuted, and they're slaves, and maybe many of them even have lost their faith in Jehovah. So, who am I to explain to them who the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob is? I'm not a theologian. What does God say? Now, this may seem strange to us in verse 14, especially if you don't know Hebrew. But actually, what God says is very simple. God said unto Moses, I am that I am. God uses the Hebrew verb to be, I am. And he repeats it, I am, I am. What's he saying by that expression? He's saying to Moses, you tell them that the God who has sent you there is not just the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He's the God who always is, the eternal God, the I am. The one who's present, past and future wrapped up. The one who's from everlasting to everlasting. The one who's Alpha and Omega. I am him. I'm not like these gods of Egypt which change shape depending on who's hammering with the chisel and the hammer to shape their idols. Or change their names as there's a new group comes in, they change the name, they evolve the names. I'm not like those gods, he says. I'm the eternal God. I am the one true and only living God, from everlasting to everlasting, the omniscient one, the one who knows all things, the one who controls all things, the one who's omnipotent, as well as omniscient, knows all things. I'm him. I'm him. And Moses, your job is just to go down there and tell them the great God, the true God, has spoken. And he's here. And he's with me and he's with you, his people. He's going to take care of you. Now, the Lord is making clear to Moses by this expression, I am that I am. That he is not dependent upon Moses. He is not dependent upon any of his creatures. He is transcendent. He is outside of creation. He is the true God. And you know, maybe you're here today and you're thinking, who's the God that I serve? Who's the God that's with me? He's the God that's from everlasting to everlasting. He's the God who always has been and always will be. Now, that's very hard for us to imagine a person like that. Isn't that right? Because we live in a finite world and we're controlled by fixed laws, finite laws. And we live in a temporal situation where things come and go. And it's very hard for us as humans to imagine, to even think about a person who is transcendent, outside of nature, transcends creation. A person who is eternal, doesn't have a beginning, doesn't have an end. Sometimes people say to me, well, what is eternity? And here's the very simple answer. I don't know. Because I'm as human as you. I get a headache if you talk to the physicists and they say to you, space is expanding. I say, okay, very interesting. But let me ask you a question. Can I theoretically get to the end of space, the edge of space as it's expanding? They say, oh, yes, 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 you can, the physicists. Well, I says, I have one more question. If I can get to the edge of space, theoretically, what's behind it? What's over the edge? And then the physicists go, oh. Class over. Change topics. Don't want to discuss that. Because they have no answer. We have a very limited understanding of this universe. Really do. And we don't know how it is or how to express a person who is beyond time, space and matter. We can't think like that. It's very hard for us. And God doesn't try to prove it to us. He just tells us, I am that I am. I am the eternal God. I don't have a beginning. I don't have an end. You just have to accept it. Because there's so many things you can't understand as a human. You're limited. Even at school, when you do maths, they have that little thing, isn't it? 22 over 7. Pi. And you say, how many digital points does that go to? And they go, 3.14, blah, 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 blah. I won't even try. You get these people who memorize thousands of numbers. You ask your maths teacher, how long does it go on for? And they say, it's an infinite number. Well, what's an infinite number? Oh, one that goes on forever. Well, does it have an ending? No. Why does it not have an end? Don't know. And God tells Moses, listen, you don't have to understand me, Moses. You don't have to know all about me. You never can. But just remember this. I am who I am. I am the ever-living one. I am the one who began all of this. I am the one who's behind all the laws of nature. I am the one who made time, space, and matter. I am the one who controls this universe. Not you, Moses. Not Pharaoh. Really what God is saying to Moses is, get on your bike, get down to Egypt. He wouldn't say bike, he'd say horse. In this case, get on your horse, get moving. And you know, God is gracious to Moses because in verse 15 to verse 22, God gives three promises to Moses. He knows this guy's weak. He knows this guy's cowardly. And God, and I won't go through the promises from verse 15 to verse 22, he'll give three promises. He says, the first promise is the leadership of Israel. They will hearken unto thy voice. Verse 18. He says, you go down to Egypt, Moses. You obey me, Moses. You'll discover the people will listen to you. The Jewish people. They will hearken unto your voice. Now that's a remarkable thing because this guy's 80 years of age. And he's been absent. Most of the people who are living in Egypt never heard of him. Most of his generation have probably died off. God says, you go there, Moses. You turn up out of the blue after 40 years of being absent. Don't you worry, the people will listen to you, the Jewish people. The second promise God gives him is, in verse 19, God says, I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not by a mighty hand or a strong hand. He says, Pharaoh will resist. Pharaoh will fight this, Moses. Oh, I know in advance, I know the future. God says, I promise that Pharaoh will resist you. But he says in verse 20, I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. God says, I'll use you, Moses. Oh, Pharaoh will oppose you, no doubt about it. But he says, I'll give you great power, Moses. I'll do great signs and wonders through you, Moses. And then the third promise he gives Moses is this. He will let you go in the end. Pharaoh will let you go. Just be patient. Just have faith. And you'll not just go. He says you won't go empty, because in verse 22, he says, every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and her that sojourneth in her house. That's some of the Egyptian had made the Jewish girls slaves in their house, no doubt. And this expression, you'll borrow, means they will give you. Remember, the Israelites had been working for the Egyptians free of charge for decades, the slaves. And God says, I'm going to make the Egyptians pay you wages, what you're really owed. And he says, they will give you jewels of silver, jewels of gold and raiment, beautiful clothes. Ye shall put them on your sons and your daughters, and ye shall spoil. The idea of the word spoil is, this is what you'll win. You know, when an army defeats another army, they spoil the treasures of the other defeated army. They take them, basically, for themselves. And God says, I'm going to use you, Moses. You might be an old man, you might be 80, you might be frail, you might be insignificant now, but I'm going to bring you down to Egypt, and I'm going to use you in a mighty way. And at the end of it, Pharaoh and his people will let you go. And they won't just let you go, they'll pour out gifts, great wealth upon you. Now, all of this Moses has to believe on by faith. He doesn't have any other signs or wonders. God just says, this is what I will do if you're willing to do what I tell you to do. Go down to Egypt, Moses. Now, next week we'll see, how will Moses respond to God's promises? How he should have responded is, I'm on my way. I'm booking a first class ticket to get there faster. But we'll discover next week. Moses is like us. Excuse after excuse after excuse. What can we learn from this story? Well, I think we can learn from this story. Maybe you're here today and you think, my life is going nowhere. My life has no significance. I failed the Lord many times. I'm past my best. God couldn't use me. Well, the story of Moses is, you are a perfect candidate for God to use. Because you know now that it's not about you. It's about God. It's not about your wisdom. It's about God's wisdom. It's not about your strength. It's God's strength. And you know, we're so easily impressed today with people who have a big education, big bank account, big job, big title. If you read the Bible, you'll discover God rarely chooses and uses such people. Very rare. Who did he build the New Testament church on? A group of fishermen, Peter, James, and John. The least educated, the ones who had the least ability to speak Hebrew, they were regarded as nothing by the Jewish people, the fishermen. They were regarded as the lowest in that society, the least educated. Their clothes smelt of fish. I used to work in the fish factory when I was a boy, and when you would come home from the fish factory, I tell you, the smell was everywhere. My mother used to say, don't come into the house. Go to the garage and change. And then she would throw all the clothes into the wash machine. And then she would send us straight to the bath. And even after you soaked in the bath for an hour, the smell would still be in your ears and your fingernails from a fish factory. And if they saw Peter and James and John walking down the street of Jerusalem, all those educated Jewish rabbis and Pharisees, they would say, they'd sniff. Who are these ignorant fishermen? Unlearned people. Smell like fish. They have nothing. They are nothing. And yet God chose those people. And they weren't of great character. We see this in the Gospels, don't we? Peter, he was a rough guy. He was a stubborn person. He was a hot-tempered man. Proud. Yet God chose him. And even though Peter feared God, God still didn't cast him aside. Still continued to use him. And how he used him. And the same with Moses. Moses was a young, proud, educated, self-confident man. Prince of Egypt. And God had to say, can't use you. Go to the wilderness for 40 years. And maybe that's where God has put you. Because God is preparing to use you. Now, in your life. I know there are stories in this room. I've heard some of them. Some of you have suffered great heartache. Some of you are going through great trials, even right now. Where you're in an environment that you're surrounded by people who hate you, despise you, take advantage of you. But one thing you can be sure of, in fact, there's two things you can be sure of. God has put you there. Number one. Number two, God is with you there. God is with you there. And you just do the right thing there. And you wait until God moves you somewhere else. You know, it wasn't easy for Moses 40 years in the desert. Most educated man, most brilliant man. A commander of men to be taking care of a few sheep. Not even his sheep. 40 years. Not 40 months. 40 years. Imagine 40 years. 4 decades of humiliation. All his education, he would have said, wasted. But it wasn't wasted. Because God was just preparing him. In fact, his greatest moments of blessing was about to come. His greatest moments of serving the Lord was about to come. Because for the next 40 years of his life, he becomes Moses, the servant of God. The greatest title a man can ever get. You know that? Well, the president of the United States. They say that's the most powerful man on the earth. What a joke. What a joke. Or the chairman of the Federal Reserve, the man who controls the purse strings of the richest economy in the world. Who wants that job? No, the job you want to have is Moses, the servant of the Lord. Well, that's the title that has real significance. That's the title that has eternal significance. Make sure it's the one that you have in your life. Let us pray. Father, we thank thee for this thy word. The entrance of thy word strengthens us. Changes us, instructs us. Help us, Lord, to receive it with all meekness and humility. Help us to respond like little Samuel. Here am I. Send me. Speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. We thank thee that Moses did eventually respond the right way. And how you used this man blessed him and empowered him to become the meekest man on the earth, the greatest prophet of the Jewish nation, the author of the first five books of the Bible, all because a weak, failed man was willing to say yes to God. Help us, Lord, to learn these lessons. For we ask these things in Jesus' precious name. Amen.